This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. You may recognize the pictures of D.L. Anderson and Jeremy Lang from the Independent Weekly, where they have served as staff photographers for several years. But what if you weren't looking at their work in the newspaper? What if you were looking at their photos framed and hung on the wall of a gallery? Would they look different to you? Does context matter to the meaning of a photograph? You can answer the question yourself by visiting a new exhibit called Beyond Deadlines at the Durham Arts Council. The exhibit includes some of D.L. and Jeremy's favorite images from The Independent, ranging from Boy Scouts to butchers. The show attempts to frame everyday life in fresh and thought-provoking ways and to give us a glimpse into the world of photojournalism. And D.L. Anderson and Jeremy Lang join me in the studio today. Welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having
us. Good to be here.
How did Beyond Deadlines exhibit come about?
The Durham Arts Council had approached me about doing an exhibit by myself, but I'd been looking for a long time for a venue to display some of the work we do at The Independent with Jeremy, my colleague there. And we started thinking about, well, you know, what images would we put up? You know, what would people appreciate? And the project kind of, in several, what I think about 9 months, of planning.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yep. Yeah, and thinking about the images we wanted to show in a museum setting and how those images would be different from what we decide to show in the newspaper.
So take us through the thought process. How are they different? How do you choose, Jeremy?
I think some of the photographs, I mean, you could refer to them almost as outtakes. You know, a lot of the time when you're dealing with a newspaper, you sort of need to tell the story in one picture, but most of the times have many, many more pictures that don't see the light of day that, you know, with further reflection, I think can add more layers to the story. So I think that was one of our goals, was to try to get people to look a little longer, not show just the obvious picture and some of the more subtle details.
It's interesting that you would say that. I mean, if you can tell the story in one photo, that, I mean, suggests to me many, many layers. A story has got length, it's got width, it's got depth. Mm-hmm. It took place over a period of time. And the great thing about good photojournalism is you get a sense. You should have a little sense of the history and where this person came from, certainly their immediate moment, and perhaps give you a glimpse into the future. How do you distinguish that? Because as I look at these photos, they do strike me as things I wouldn't see in a newspaper, and yet they're journalistic. They're moments in time and in space.
I think that's the key, is that they're moments. They last. And, you know, these images, we culled together about 400, 500 photographs and started editing down and having some pretty serious discussions about, you know, certain images, but other images were just clear as day because there was a moment and there was something that gravitated to you. And I think a lot of times when you're choosing a photograph for print, it has to fulfill a certain purpose. It has to be graphically striking and reach out to the reader or convey a lot of ideas in one photo. And it doesn't always allow for the quieter images to come through.
Well, is that one of the big differences then? On a wall, in a gallery, I can expect someone to take a little more time. So the amount of time I might spend with the photo.
I think that's what we were hoping for, was that, you know, frequently the picture in print will be for that specific story, but there are other pictures that may speak to a larger story and aren't going to be, maybe it wouldn't communicate the best when you're flipping through the newspaper, but when you have time, you can sit there and just look at it. The pictures are larger. I think you can really get more layers to us. Some, you know, a larger story, and because you have the time to sit there and stare at it, you know, and it's 30 inches on a wall.
Mm-hmm. How do you approach your jobs when you go out and you're in the field? Do you take a shot and say, "Oh, that's a great shot. It'll never make the paper, but I love this shot."
You know, from time to time, sure. Yeah, sure. It could have nothing to do with an assignment. You know, I have a little folder. I kind of take my favorite unrelated outtakes and pile them up in there. I mean, I think we're always exploring with our cameras, so it's just part of the process for us.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
And we both, you know, I mean, a large part of the reason I think we do is that we just love making photographs. So, you know, whether you're out with a specific story in mind, if you see something good, you're still going to shoot it. Maybe it relates, maybe it doesn't, but hopefully you can find a place for it at some point.
Now, when these move to the, and you get to call them art because you're hanging them on a wall, do you feel like you can touch them up at all? Did you play with these in ways that you wouldn't feel ethically responsible to do for a newspaper?
I don't think so. No. I mean, not from my standpoint. I might have spent slightly more time getting it exactly right because, you know, any sort of color shifts or all this technical stuff is going to show up a little bit more on a print. But no, I don't think from both of our standpoint there's no more manipulation in those photographs than there would be in a newspaper.
Jeremy, some of your photos focused on on soldiers returning in coffins from the Iraq and Afghanistan. Tell us when you about taking those pictures, the decision, and some of the process.
Well, I think it was back in 2006, 2007. You know, there's all this stuff going on with Afghanistan and Iraq, and I realized that I didn't see any pictures of what was happening. Sort of after you see the combat pictures, and even then, it wasn't that much of that. And I really felt that there was a story that wasn't getting talked about, like what happens when people die or injured or could just come back and they aren't. Maybe they're fine, maybe they're not. And at the time, there was the ban on photographing returning coffins, but that was only a federal – I discovered that it was only a federal ban. If the family would allow you to come when they received the body as opposed to the body just coming back to the country – then you could go and do that.
How did the families receive that? I mean, you had to go up and ask them.
Yeah, well, I would call. I mean, one of the hardest things for me was calling ahead of time. I was like, I'm going to call these people who are probably going through the worst moments of their lives and try to explain in a very short amount of time why I'm calling them. And I decided from the beginning that was the only way I was going to do it. I was not just going to show up and try to figure it out when I got there. I wanted permission ahead of time. And, you know, I was actually surprised at how many people said yes. If it was me, I don't know if I would, but I explained what I wanted to do. And
did they mostly just say yes? Did they seem almost? Did they seem to want these photographs?
They
displayed?
Did. Or even if they were unsure, I mean, when I was done, I sent every family who I worked with, I sent them a set of the best photographs that I thought I had from that event. And what I got back from them was like, I never really thought I wanted this, but thank you so much for being there. One man in particular had hired somebody to photograph his son's funeral, but the guy stopped when the ceremony started. He said out of respect. So he had no photographs of it. Mm. I sent him these pictures, you know, and he called me crying from the firehouse that he works at about how happy he was to have the photograph so he could remember his son, you know, being honored for the service that he did.
We certainly know about the power of these photographs. That was obviously a deliberate effort by the government to keep the American people from fully realizing the cost of this war, taking away the possibility of seeing the tragedy and the real cost. Photographs are important. They're powerful. Interesting to you, the part of Barack Obama's decision not to release the photographs of Osama bin Laden was that, look, the skeptics aren't going to believe a photograph either. It's not going to be compelling evidence to them. So, you know, why do this? I mean, that was sort of part of the rationale. I wonder what your take on that was.
Mm. I think with regard to photographs now, there's so much deception that can occur, so much manipulation. It's no longer the truth that you can see something to and you believe it in a lot of ways. But, you know, we wanted to offer the complete opposite of that. And you know, these images are honest and come straight from the camera, and we believe very much in that approach. But if your source is unknown and the who's touched the photos, I probably... I don't know how I saw it exactly, if I'd want to see it or not, but I respect their decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was one of the... Obviously, it would also give great weight I think, fan the flames of our enemies in terms of their contempt for us. And so all of these were parts of the decision. It was just interesting that that was one of the factors that ultimately wouldn't be compelling anyway. D.L., one of your pictures in the exhibit is the bathroom of the Duke Lacrosse House. Why did you decide to include that one?
I think it was a decision because that image had never been, I'd never shown that to anyone. And I feel like that was at the center of a very big story for this area.
Describe the photo for us.
The photo is pretty simple. It almost looks like it's a black and white image. It's the bathroom wall directly above a toilet. You see the top of a toilet and you see these black marks, streaks all over the wall, and it's kind of unclear But at the size that these photos are printed, you get up close and you can see that it's fingerprint dust. And I put that in the caption. And it starts to carry a different sort of weight, because at first it's interesting from a graphical standpoint, and showing it to a few people and asking for their feedback before and after I let them know what the image is of, it changes pretty dramatically. But I felt so much of the story with the Duke LaCrosse case involved this house, which I happened to live next to at the time, and no one was really speaking up from either side. So this large media circus had moved into town with no one to talk to, and the house kind of took this role. And everyone was speculated.
It's interesting, too. I mean, talk about context being everything. Imagine that photograph in the papers at the height of the controversy while it was going on, say 3 days after the arrest or the accusations were made. It would take on one meaning: fingerprint dust, the bathroom. We're all at that point. We would be looking for evidence, right?
Right. It's a crime scene photo.
Years later, because we know what happened, we know how this tragic story played out, it has an entirely different meaning. And again, hanging on a wall with a little time to reflect, it becomes a kind of work of art because of the way it works on us.
Yeah, I mean, that was I'd never seen the photograph before Derek brought it in, and I was like, wow, that's, it looked like a really pretty picture. And then you get the kind. I mean, I think that's exactly what we were going for, is that this is this really quiet picture. Would it have been the most functional picture in the newspaper at the time? I don't think it would have been. But on reflection, it becomes, as you said, it takes on a whole different meaning and allows for some more thought about the whole event.
Well, you can find the meaning and take time to think about it when you go to the Durham Arts Council and see the exhibit by Derek Anderson and Jeremy Lang. Thank you both very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having us,
Frank. Thank you.
Thank you to Derek Anderson and Jeremy Lang. You can see their exhibit Beyond Deadlines at the Durham Arts Council. It will be there through May 15th. Thank you for listening to The State of Things. And by the way, today we say goodbye to our intern, Nasser Abbas. Nasser, thank you so much for your service, particularly during our live music segments on Fridays, getting the bands out of Tyler's and into the studio. It's no easy job, and he's done it quite well. Thanks so much. He's leaving for work. Apparently, they pay these kids when they leave us. They spoil him now. See, we've had him for nothing. He was perfectly happy. Somebody told him about money. Now he's gone to Alamance Community College, and he's going to teach computer literacy to students there for filthy lucre. Good luck, Nasser. He's been great, and I thank you so much for your work. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.